Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and tonight's broadcast is on Moors and transformation from boy to man. And we're going to deal with how to do that so that you have that under your belt and you know what steps to take. We're going to be dealing with the following questions, and this is going to be part one. We're coming back with part two of this thing. How do we rid ourselves of fear of any man? How does the transformation from boy to to man, how is that made? Why is it important to mate and marry among our own species? Who and what is man? Where does God live? Does our past have any bearing on the future? Where do the boy get the power from? What about the spiritual knowledge and power of a man? Should a real man spend his time trying to love everybody? What people should a man be concerned about first? Does a man have power to bring peace on the earth? These questions and much more is going to be dealt with this evening. We're going to do the best we can at dealing with all of it. And all that we don't get today, we coming back and get it tomorrow. Now, the first thing I want to add is I'm offering free articles for those of you who are brand new here this evening. The 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game and How to Play, and Secrets of America, you get that by going to Tahaga53@hotmail.com. Just say, Tahaga, send me the free articles you mentioned on your broadcast, and I'll get that straight to you with the quickness. Those of you who don't have a power base in your house, you need a power base in there. We created the most comprehensive power base there is. We have a massive library that has everything in it from your culture, your story, everything you need to know about law, setting up your estate, dealing with your mortgage company, bank, po-po, everything right there for you to get a hold of right at your fingertips. And the most unique thing about this system is once you get it, you have access to a coach that will walk you through it. You ain't in it by yourself. You don't need nobody to go do no documents for you. You got it all right there. You just need somebody to point as they do that and do this and do that. Okay? And that's the way that do. The way you access that is go to TahakaArchives.org. That's TahakaArchives.org. And access that thing and get on up in there. Now, what I want this to be this evening, because I'm getting tired of talking at you. What I want you to do is go ahead and raise your hand as we go along with this thing. So if you got any questions or comments, we can deal with it. You get a chance to be heard. If you have questions about the transformation, if you got any questions in regard to the subject that we're dealing tonight, we want to make sure that you get a chance to be heard so that we can deal with it and provide you with some kind of aid, okay? So don't hesitate to raise your hand. The call-in number for this broadcast is 310-982-4184. If you need to speak to the host, press 1, and that will give me an indication that you want to talk to me. And we get on in there, and we let you get a chance to deal with some things so that we can help you out. Okay? So don't hesitate. Just go ahead and raise your hand, and that way we'll be able to help you out.
We need strong, aggressive. I got words that I can use, but I can't think of words to describe. A person who you can't get along with because they overly aggressive and they jerks. You know we got other words for them? Those are the kind of brothers that we need to see running stuff. Dudes that just ain't going to take no for an answer, push forward, sophisticated enough to show respect, but will not stop at anything to get progress for our people. We need warriors, militant ass kickers.
That's right.
Nobody should be confusing our people as to what militant black manhood represents and the reason it exists. It exists because that's who we are as a race of men. When there's a threat, we man up and we fight it. That's our job. That's what we've done for thousands of years, and we ain't going to stop doing it, and ain't nobody going to be allowed to confuse us and make us think that when we see a black man that's a warrior, that we're looking at a homo, and when we're looking at a homo that's talking black talk, that we're looking at a black man. So I got to put this out so we can see it, because I want to straighten up the record to be very clear. We love the black warriors, and we support their warriorhood, and we know warriorhood when we see it.
Look,
I was talking with a sister one day, and she mentioned one of my ministers. And she said, you know, he was abused when he was young. I didn't say a word. But when she said that, I brought him up in my mind and I looked at him. Some of us are very authoritative because we're trying to be men because somebody did something to us. And in order to be men, when you're in a position of authority, you use it in a negative way to beat people down rather than help people up. You know people like that in the church. You raise them up and give them authority, and the next thing you know, they're hurting and harming people because they don't know how to serve. Their egos are so destroyed by the things that have happened to them in their lives. Even though they preach the word, they're sick inside. And they need a healing. So when she said that, I looked at my brother. And I hope that I'm not being out of place when I say this. I had a wonderful helper in Brother Khalid Muhammad. I met him as a student at Dillard University in Louisiana. He had a big medallion of Brother Malcolm on his chest. Oh, God. And he came to the nation. Such a beautiful person inside. When he saw his brother in a bad shape, Khalid would go and sit down on the curb with him and talk to him and pick him up and bring him to the mosque and put him in the shower and get some clothes and put it on him. That's the kind of heart he had. But something was disturbing him. He didn't have the best relationship with his mother. He was in foster homes, and only God knows what happens to our children when they're in these places. And so he always felt that he had to be more macho than anybody else. And I was trying to civilize him and tell him how you can be a statesman, but you want to fight all the time and, you know, show off this kind of power. And I didn't realize that my brother was affected by some abuse.
I want to be very clear. It's much worse. I just showed enough to people to understand. It's much worse. Let me make this very clear. Don't let anybody confuse you about what it means to have men and women in your community who get angry when they hear about black men and women getting killed and getting shot, getting fired when they haven't done nothing wrong and getting mistreated. And when a person like that stands up for you and us and defends our interests and will fight with our enemies and will kill our enemies, will put their own lives on the line for us, you are not looking at a person that is troubled. You're looking at a person that is troubled by the system of racism, white supremacy, and the fact that it's dominating our people. They represent the warriors that go from thousands of years in our history and that will go for thousands of years in our future. That is the black man. That is the black woman. That is Queen Nzinga. That is Bukman Duddy. That is John Jackson Dessalines. And don't let nobody, including Minister Farrakhan, tell you that a man is a faggot. Don't let them tell you that if you kowtow and bend over, that makes you a man. It does not. How do I know? I got a good relationship with my mama. My mama's in Southeast now, Northeast. She's still my number one supporter. I wouldn't have been able to get the house I got if it wasn't for my mother. And guess what? I'm aggressive. I ain't never been sexually abused, but I'm what you call a man. So if my brother's sexually abused or my daughter's sexually abused, I'm just as angry, if not more angry, than I would have been if it happened to me. And there's nothing wrong with black male aggression. That's how we're going to put a foot in this cracker's ass and bring an end to him on planet Earth with black male aggression. If you want to be weak, take your punk ass and get your ass to another planet and let the men and women come together and stand for a future for African people. It's wrong to do that to our people. It's wrong to steal the last component of manhood from our people and try to make us into you. If you can't see straight and hate your enemies, let that be you. If you got to kowtow and be friends and want to integrate, if you want to play fancy songs for the enemies and get the shine and approval of our white enemies, get it. I don't want nothing but his pain. I don't want nothing but the enemy to hate the day I was born. It don't make me a fag. It makes me a man. What are you? But I want people to understand. Some of y'all used to call him Khaled. We don't call him Khaled no more. That was just a man. What do you call a god? A god-like black man that would come at a time when our people were suffering, facing extermination, and we had forgotten what it was like to be men, to look our enemies in the face and to strike fear into them. I would say that Amun would come in the person of a man so that we could see a demonstration of divine order and divinity in a man on earth so that little black boys and black girls and black men and black women could stop turning our cheeks. We could stand up erect and we could follow the creator who created us first back to ascending to the powerhouse on this planet. So I say he wasn't a man. He was a God. He was what God wants us to be. He was flawed because he came in the form of a man, but he wasn't flawed enough for him to be nothing but a God on planet Earth to us and a demonstration of what real black manhood is supposed to be. Y'all mind if I show you how a black man really supposed to talk and interact with black people when our people are being exterminated across the world? Can I show you what it's supposed to look like? What it's supposed to feel like? What it's supposed to sound like, what it's supposed to do to your insides when a black man is a real black man. Y'all sure? Can you hear Amun? Y'all want to hear something from Amun? The creator talking to men?
Get out of town by Sunday. I say if they don't get out of town, we kill the men, we kill the women, we kill the children, we kill the babies. We kill the blind, we kill the cripple, we kill the crazy, we kill the faggots, we kill the lesbians. I said, God damn it, we kill them all. He said, well, why kill them all? Why kill the women? First, why kill the babies? They're just little innocent blue-eyed babies. Because, God damn it, they're going to grow up one day to rule your babies. Kill them now. Why kill the women in South Africa? I said kill the women because the women are the military manufacturing center. And every 9 months they lay down on their backs and reinforcement rolls out from between their legs. So shut down the military manufacturing center by killing the white woman. Why kill the elder crackers? The old crepit crackers in South Africa. How in the hell you think they got old? They got old oppressing and killing black people.
Yes, sir.
I said, kill the cripple, kill the elfar, kill the hog, God damn it. Kill them all. Kill the faggots, kill the lesbians. And after you kill them all, I said that day about Mandela to let you know what he really knows about me, don't know a damn thing. I said, then you go to the goddamn grave and dig them up and kill them a goddamn head. Because they didn't die hard enough. And if you don't have the strength to dig them up after you've done all that work, just go to the grave and shoot in the damn grave. Kill them again. Because they didn't die hard enough. I don't have no respect for Mandela.
Y'all like that, huh? I'm losing my voice, but that's all right. I got the voice of the creator, and we can play that. So I say we got to look at this, brothers and sisters, because y'all all right? Y'all got a few more minutes for this? I can't talk that much longer anyway, so y'all ain't got that much longer to go. He said, keep it going, right? Look at here. At one time, we saw the infrastructure that has surrounded us. All they've done is intensified with a more direct attack. Political infrastructure, now they just put the main one running the whole show. It used to be Morehouse in Atlanta that was the intellectual vanguard. Oh, I'm sorry. It still is Morehouse. That ain't changed. And now we got a whole new group that's going. What I say, brothers and sisters, when you fight in a war, you fight in a battle, you got to consider how you view the world. What I'm saying, we can view it like we being surrounded on all corners. Or you can say, you know, Amen wouldn't look at it like that. The Creator don't look at it from the scared point of view. He look at the upside of what he going to do and how he going to handle it. Maybe instead of us being surrounded on all sides, maybe our enemies are easily identifiable and isolated in different areas, making it possible for us to target each one of them, to move those elements out of our way as a race of people and take away their influence on our people, ultimately replacing this homosexual vanguard that's trying to destroy us by strong black militant rule. What y'all think about that? That's something you like better than feeling like victims? What's going to happen when these freaks become our victims? That's the world we got to move to, brothers and sisters. So I just want to end it because I don't want to end it on a low note. We got to go out high. Listen, we said black versus homos war. We see what the homos done. But what are black people doing? I want y'all to listen. This is critical. The premier scholar of the 21st century, the one that got put out of Morehouse, but it hasn't stopped it. It's only made him more effective. This man got 17 books, got an 18th one on the way. The most critical information for the re-education of African people amongst us today, Brother Mulimu Baruti. Let's show him some love, brothers and sisters. Foundational book. Homosexuality and the Effeminization of African Males. You got to get that book. Listen to me. All the college students out there, listen. You have a job. I'm giving you a job. The homos run all of the black colleges now. If you're a black college student in a black university or in a white one, you're part of the black student union, if you're not, become one. Your job is to make sure that this man can never rest. Because every weekend of his life, he's going to a black college campus getting paid the same honorarium you pay these coons and these shines to come out there and miseducate our people, to give our people the right information. Organize and get this man out there so that he can change the minds of our people. He is our number one premier.
Okay, Moses, we back. Now, that's kind of harsh and that's kind of rough. But we're talking about boys and men, and we ain't talking about nothing soft tonight. We're going to deal with this thing. If you think what you heard is wrong, go ahead and raise your hand and point out to us where it was wrong, okay? Go ahead and raise your hand, and the whole world will listen to you point out where it's wrong at. I think that's fair. But in the meantime, I'm going to get on to making a transformation. But before I do, I want to make mention of the fact that I have read, for those of you who are Christians and in the Christian church, I have read the Bible, your King James Version Bible from cover to cover at least 7 times during my lifetime. I've even went so far as to take an extensive college course on it during my lifetime. And what was extremely fascinating to me, and I know most of you who are in the Christian church have heard at one point in your life about the story of King David. We read how David was a warrior. David was killing people. Now, if he didn't kill anybody, raise your hand. I'll open up the mic so you can point out where I may have misread it. But as far as I could read, and there's a possibility I could be wrong, but I need you to point it out to me. But he killed men. Now, during the killing, I didn't see any references where God broke in to say that you can't, don't kill nobody. I don't see where he did that. After the killing was over, after he killed 40 men, 50 men, 60 men, 70 men, I looked to see all the references where God rushed in to say, wait a minute, there's been a terrible mistake. You killed somebody. I keep searching the Bible. I can't find it, but I did find the reference that said, you are a man after my own heart. Now, let's go on to the next point of making the transformation from boy to man. Young men, you're in your mama house. Your first investment while you're there should be in power. You need to start investing in books so you can have them right there close by where you can go in and start studying your culture and your story and the men in your ancient story and what they done on this earth. Because today's society wants you to believe that that happened yesterday and what they did yesterday, you should not do any of that today. You should hold a meeting. You should do something different. You should think differently. We should all of us should love everybody. We should all have one giant community where all of us is in. Never mind the fact that everybody else is loving their own self and connected to their culture and has come into your neighborhood and taken money out of there and left your neighborhood in shambles. Forget about that. We don't want to talk about that because we need to love everybody. What was unique to me is I had a conversation with my neighbor once. She's a single mother, and her daughter is grown, and she's moved on. And she says, I need to get me a man. I said, well, sister, I said, well, I don't understand. I say, you, from what I see, every Sunday morning, you going to church. She said, oh, yes, I go to church every Sunday morning. I said, well, are you in a church with nothing but women? Oh, no, there are men in the church. I said, well, why? Well, if there are men in the church, why you haven't communicated with the brothers in the church? I don't want them. I want a man. I said, well, wait a minute. Hold on. Now, because you losing me with this. I live next door to you. Now, you know what my position, you know. If I think something going wrong, I crank off about 12 rounds from a 9, just about what I thought might have happened. I said, but you're telling me that inside the church, there are men, but you don't want none of them. Why? I don't want to say nothing bad about nobody. I just don't. Okay. I couldn't get no further answer out of her about that. But then I had a lady friend of mine, and I asked her, what did she think about our relationship? She said, our relationship is wonderful. I said, well, you go to the big church over there. I said, what about all the men there? She said, I listened to my mama when I was growing up. My mama said, whatever you do, don't get no church boy. I said, wait a minute, wait. I said, what's wrong with them? She said, I don't want them. I said, wait. And both of these sisters told me the same thing, but they would never tell me why, because I want to get to the why of that kind of situation. But now let's deal with the boy. Boy, going from boy to man. Fellas, if you're on here, I need you to raise your hand and tell me where I'm telling you wrong. First, we need to get the power. The power is knowledge. When I was in my mama's house, I would always buy books. Always. Every time I got a nickel or extra, I would go down to the bookstore and I would buy certain books. And I wouldn't leave there until I examined that book and make sure it was right. When I got my first book on my culture and my story and the great kings of Africa, I would study it. And I would, at the end of the book, they would always make reference to other authors that I need to get their book to. And so what I do based on those recommendations, I write down those authors, and then I go get their book. I would never go into a bookstore and just pick a book because of what the cover looked like. About an author, I ain't know nothing about. I would always get what was recommended by the authors that wrote the book that I had in my hand. And I built a small library. But I made mistakes because other men saw me, what I was doing, and reading and buying the books and stuff. They wanted to borrow my books instead of going and buying their own. And I would loan my books, and they would never come back. So I stopped doing that. Don't do that. Always give them the author and the store you got it from so that they can man up, take responsibility, and go get their book. Because the first thing you need to know is who you are and about your culture and your story. And if you miss something, you might even have to go back and reread it again. So you need to build your power base, your library. When it comes to economics, you need books on economics. When it comes to silver and gold, you need books on that. When it comes to war, which is something that occurred on Earth, you need to find out what happened. What went on? You need that knowledge. Wise man in the middle is with all knowledge. But that's your starting point. Now, when you move out your mama's house, carry your library with you. Wherever you go, from house to house, your library is a primary resource. Carry it with you so that you can remain connected to knowledge of self. And you can have a clear, concise understanding of your identity, and you are connected to your story. Because there are forces in effect today that's doing everything they can to keep you disconnected from your story. Because as long as you are disconnected from your story, you cannot act collectively as a nation. They're bringing all kind of stuff up. Well, you need to be, we need to think about what Obama said last night. The NAACP said so and so and so and so. No. Get rid of it. You need to bring total control of your brain. Now, me personally, this is just something I do. It's up to you how you want to do your thing. I don't look at TV. There's 99% of what I see on there have a face on it that don't look like me. So I don't want the brain recording that because I want to be connected to my story. Because if I'm sitting down to a table with a man and both of us are speaking English, we could both be talking about the same thing, but we are certainly talking to each other from two different worldviews. You can't come to me and tell me about going skiing and how you going to do over there. I don't want to hear that. Most of my people don't go skiing. You can't come to me and tell me about going on the water, getting in a cage and examining sharks. We don't need all that. We don't do that. I don't want to know nothing about bungee jumping. We don't do that either. So you talking to me about some, you know what, that I have absolutely no interest in, and I know doggone well my people in mass ain't involved in it. So we're speaking to each other from two different worldviews. Okay, now let's move on to the next point. Keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, you got any questions, go ahead and raise your hand, and I will open up the mic so that you can come in and give us your side of the story, okay?
Okay, just what is Tahaka's Archive? Tahaka Archives is a collection of some of the most beneficial information in the country. And the way we do this is we put this in your possession and we walk you through getting the job done. Whatever it is that you're dealing with, if you're dealing with your kids in education, if you're dealing with mortgage companies, if you're dealing with bankers, if you're dealing with your light and water company, credit card companies, regardless of what it is, that is the way this thing is designed, because everybody in this country, especially people of African descent, need a power base inside your home. So to access Tahaka's Archive, you simply go to www.tahakaarchives.org and contact me after you get through with that. Area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and we get you in there. That's tahakaarchives.org. Okay? That's what it's all about. Thank you.
Okay. The next point that I want to get to is once you start putting this information inside your brain, you start building this library. Because, see, this investment that you originally made in your mother's home to accumulate this knowledge, you're going to take it with you. And eventually, if you continue, you'll probably have to build a bookcase, or buy one to store your books. Because the first step is knowledge. You invested in a power base. So now you're building this personal library, and now you're able to have something that you can put in your will and pass on to your son. We don't know what the economic conditions may be like in the future, but you have taken responsibility for yourself and provided and invested in power to provide and give it to your children. That's step one. And you carry it with you. You get married, it goes with you. Somebody come in there wanting to borrow something? No. Only thing I can give you is the title and where to get it from. But we cannot let this, because this is an asset. This goes on to my children in the future, my children and my grandchildren and my great-great-grandchildren. My grandfather brought me a rocking chair. And that rocking chair, the man that sold him that rocking chair told him, say, this thing here, say, this is made out of a certain kind of wood, and this will last through your child's and your grandchildren and your great-great-grandchildren and your great-great-great-great-grandchildren's lifetime. The way it's built, you can't tear it up. And we still have this thing. There's only one slat missing off of there. And I tore that slat off of there, and I had to work like the devil to get that thing off of there. But it's still there. And when I look at it from time to time, and I say, well, this thing here is made to last forever. And many of your grandchildren have got in it and rocked in that rocking chair. It was there, and available for them. But what I'm trying to tell fellas to do is to invest in power. Get your power base. Pass it on to your children and your children's children, and make sure that these particular pieces of information go on throughout your generations forever. Because inside these particular books that you have is your culture and your story, and it connects to you. That's where your power base is, right there. As a result of getting the power, now we want to get the finances. It's step two. First you get the power, then you get the money. You are proven beyond any shadow of a doubt that you qualify to take care of yourself. You can't take care of nobody until you learn how to take care of yourself, until you grab that bull by the horn and wrestle him down. Just you, man to man. You look in the mirror, you talk to yourself, you're talking to yourself man to man. You got to do this. You got to take responsibility for yourself. I don't know what we got going here today. I got in a car accident up on the street. And two cars, my car and another car, we had a pretty bad incident. Nobody got injured. But the cars were blocking up the intersection. The young man in the other car, he got out of the car. He began to rip and raid and raise all kind of sand and cusses and all. I said, well, brother, I'll be more than happy to discuss this with you, but the first thing I want to do is push these cars out of the street so we can stop the interrupting the flow of traffic. So I began to push my little car and push it all the way down the road, down a dead-end street to stop to get it all the way out of there. I looked around, here comes this young man. He followed me. He cussed, he raised his hand, he ready to go to war. I know this is something I don't understand. So he swung. When he did, I blocked it, and I threw a right. Now the equation and the circumstances has changed. He ran over there and pulled out a cell phone when he called somebody. I said, what is this? I've never experienced this in my life. I don't know what. Maybe it's because of technology or something. But I come from an area of men, and this is something that I've never seen a man do. And next thing I know, here come another man down the road. It's his cousin. He come up and he told him that's the dude right there. He ran in the car. He go pop his trunk like he get a weapon. I said, oh my God. I'm already outnumbered. We don't need no weapons. All you got to do is bring it. So I run down the street. When I get down the street, had both of them come in the car. He gets out, he reaches the trunk. He don't pull out no gun. He pull out a baseball bat. I said, okay. I understand that. So I went straight toward both of them. Nothing in hand. He swung with the baseball bat. I wrapped my arm around it like we always did. Pulled it up, snatched it out of his hand to throw it away, to get it out the contest so we could start doing the stomp and buck dance. But then he, both of them struck out running. I felt like a man all dressed up and nowhere to go. What is this? I don't understand this. I've never faced this in my life. I don't know what this is. What is it? I don't know what to do with it. I've never seen anything like it. I got the bat out the way so you don't have to worry about no interference. Whatever it is that you want to do, here I am, right here in front of you. They both struck out running. Lost me, completely lost me. I was in a complete, total, amazed wonderment. I ain't never seen nothing like this in my life. Never, never, never experienced anything like it. What is it?
He's so well known that there's actually a conspiracy to make sure that he's not well known. If you understand, if you get my drift. Because Dr. Amos Wilson is somebody who has been working relentlessly, quietly, all along, dealing with these problems that some of these psychiatrists are, you know, playing games with. Because if you read Amos's work, then there's no question about what it is that has made our people react the way they have. If the same thing happens to the Latino community, particularly the Puerto Ricano, those brothers who and sisters who actually labor, you know, for the independence of Puerto Rico. I remember back when Lolita Lebron came here in 1994, and a lot of the brothers, Irvin Flores and the rest of them, the people who in 1954 went up to the White House, you know, to see Truman the hard way, to let him know that there was a, something called Puerto Rico and that they wanted to have their independence. And they shot the place up. And I remember as a little kid, you know, wondering about, wow, this is really going to be in big trouble. Make them have a very difficult time, because you heard the adults saying that. And when Lolita came here, and before she came, there was Mayor Dinkins, when he heard about it, said he didn't want any assassins or murderers, and there was a big to-do about it. And I wrote Lolita Lebron and told her to come ahead as the chairperson of the Harlem Reception Committee for Nelson Mandela. And she came, and later on she invited me to Puerto Rico, and I went down there to speak on behalf of, you know, the struggle here and the struggle in Puerto Rico. And I met with her at a house. And to see a person like that, that kind of spirit, that still remembers, you know, that they are committed to fight for Puerto Rico's independence. So when Amos Wilson talks about the struggle about African people and about that determination to break free of the control, because this whole thing is about control. It's about actually trying to dominate and control the mind space of people who, if they had their own free will, would strike out for freedom, which is the natural inclination of all people. And so Amos, what he does when he talks about the developmental psychology of the black child, is to show you at a very early age, you know, before these people start talking about 3 years of age or 5 years of age, what they're going to try to do to control a child. As a matter of fact, if you really look at it, this whole violence initiative is aimed at making sure that Amos's program doesn't work. Because Amos is trying to grab the mind of the black child to put it in a to put the child in a position where he will grow up normal and understanding he's an African and what that means and all it entails and historically and even to the kind of demands that it makes on our present condition. So when he talks about, you know, so-called black-on-black violence and the psychodynamics of black self-annihilation in the service of white domination, he's laying out, you know, a whole idea about how black-on-black crime, whether in the United States or in South Africa, is not something that is genetically or innately, you know, and objectively just introduced into this whole struggle now, but something that is systematically placed there for a political reason, and that's to control the struggle of our people, and really to take some of the best people off and have them, as Fanon say, develop into a campaign or a pattern of auto-destructive behavior. And therefore, we become our own worst enemies. So there's Amos Wilson is the one who feels that allows us to break free of that, because he understands more than anybody else how to get out of that particular pattern. With that in mind, you know, without any further ado, will you please welcome Dr. Amos Wilson.
Thank you kindly. Thank you very much for your warm welcome. It's a pleasure to be with you here again. It's been a while. It's not because I've desired to stay away, but it's because, to a good degree, I'm away to hopefully bring a new gift to the community. The gift I hope we'll be able to deliver into the community will begin around November. That will be the time when we will initiate a series of 10 weeks of lectures on power. We talked, I was talking here earlier to a brother who was talking about the fact that we describe these issues a great deal. We talk about them and we analyze them, and we rarely get a chance to talk about solutions. Well, we've been working on solutions. We're going to talk about power not from the point of view of being victimized by it, but by developing it and using it against our enemies. At the last lecture I gave at the Slave Theater, where we were talking about global white supremacy, I initiated this theme on power by saying that we can explain the reasons Europeans victimize us in as many ways as we would like. We could talk about them as being ice people, as against the sun people, and that explanation is valid. I have no problems with it. We can talk about them in terms of their protecting their more recessive genes against our more dominant genes. We can even get into a little psychoanalysis and deal with the myth of length of penises and penis envy, all the other things, and black balls and white balls and brown balls and black holes and white balls rolling into black holes and things of this nature. And all that's fine. That's a lot of fun. But no matter how you explain why or how the European got to the point of victimizing us, I think the essential issue is that the European victimizes us because he can, because he has the power to do so. And we are victimized because we haven't developed the power to prevent his doing so. So in a sense, no matter how we explain why he does what he does, at the end point, he does what he does because he can. And consequently then, I infer from this that we can end his victimization of us when we end his power to do so. And consequently, I want to bring into the domain of discussion in this community the subject matter of power. I want us, in addition to studying black history and culture, to study power, its accumulation, its use, and application. We should talk about it every day and everywhere. We should read about it, and we should develop the means of using it. We should come to understand the nature of how white power is organized. In the end, power does not flow from the genes of white folk. Does that not flow from their ice age? It flows from the nature of their organization and the way they have chosen to relate one to the others. And it flows from their intentionality as a people and their appropriate organization of themselves to realize their intentionality, one of which is, of course, the domination of African people. And that means then that we as African people must study the rules of organization. We must study the means of relating one to each other in such a way that we multiply our power. And we must study our enemy's organization such that we can probe that organization and destroy the power of the enemy. And we can do it.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back. Now, I want to go on to the next phase that I want to talk about along with making this transformation from boy to man. It's fear. And I got to address this. I've had all kind of extraordinary situations happen after I got out of the streets And I start doing things in my own home and changing things and building and planting food and growing and building my gym and doing other things. I said I need to get out more. So I went to an area where my people hung out at. And I befriended a brother. And but the brother ended up hating on me for some reason. I had never done anything to him. And he wanna go to war. Now, I understand that very clearly. But he started going around telling people, well, what are you going to do? I'm going to kill so-and-so and so-and-so. I'm going to do that. And it got back to me. I remember the words of my grandfather. And so I found out where he was. And I went there and got out, smack dab right out in the open, so he could keep his word. I'm standing right in front of you. But he continued to talk about what he's going to do, and people are standing pointing and trying to tell him there he is right there in front of you. He ran to his car and got a phone out and started calling somebody. I don't understand that. So I say, it's time for me to go. I say, something is wrong in America. Then I start doing research, and I start watching what was going on. And I realized that we have a lot of males being brought up in a house without a man. So we have males masquerading as men, calling themselves men, talking loud, bossing women around, all kind of foolishness, eating and consuming destructive materials, just totally out of whack. So I began to dig a little further, and I found out that this thing is international. It's all the way across the United States, this kind of thing. This is a very, very wicked thing that I'm witnessing. Sometimes I feel like a dinosaur because I don't know nothing but how to deal with a situation with certain kind of ways. So I'm here now only trying to tell you how to get the foundation and everything you need in place so you can make the transformation. We got women under the impression that they can raise a son. That takes the parental coalition of a man and a woman. You can sustain him. But any child that's born in a household where one of the parents is missing is going to grow up imbalanced. He's not going to have all of what he need in him. He's not going to have that type of strength and stuff that he need. A complete, total, 360-degree balance. He's not going to have that. Now, fellas, when it comes to fear, the way to get rid of that, and you have to get rid of that, there is no place in your life for that. That is, there is nothing good that can come out of that. We even had people that try to tell us that, well, you know, we have to have a certain amount of fear. I like to correct that. Fear is not good. You replace fear with power, skills, and training. So when there's a problem, you don't have to worry about it.
You take a professional fighter. He walked the street any time of night and any time to get ready. Right? And don't fear. He ain't got it in him because he have replaced his fear with skills and training. He's a professional. So we have to, if you got a wife and children, you have to be able to protect your family. That's your job as a man. You don't, if you're in a house with your wife and somebody come around trying to crib, another man come around and disturb the house, you the man of the house. You don't tell her, baby, call the police. If I were her, I was like, well, wait a minute, you the man? That's what I'll do. Y'all just gotta excuse me. I guess I'm just old fashioned. I don't know no better. I don't come from nothing like that. I don't understand that. I don't know what that is. I don't know how to deal with that. But one way, if you're the man of the house, then you need to act like it. What you gonna be the man of the house and call another man to handle something in your house for? What you doing? And what kind of woman gonna have respect for you? I don't know. Y'all just got to excuse me, man. Sometimes I feel like I'm just in a box with what I be seeing in the mouth.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
We are at war. I don't think there's any other way to begin this or to say it. We are at war. We're in a physical war of attrition, which for some people it may appear that we are losing, but I measure based upon how far I've moved away from being your head. The slave's wisdom is in the master's head. When deeds speak words of meaningless, if they come and get your men at night, they'll be back in the morning for your women. Proverbs are people's wisdom. But when you teach children in Proverbs, then you are cultivating their ability to think. We have to stop sometimes. Someone will say a proverb to us, and we have to stop and think about what it means. And then what it means in terms of the context of whatever they're talking to us in. Because Proverbs work your brain. Proverbs make you think. Imagine what we would have in our community if every other sentence, every other discussion we had, we presented our children with a proverb relative to that. What kind of firepower we would have in the minds of our children. We wouldn't have a situation like we have now where we move from miseducation where they're given the wrong information to diseducation where they don't want to have to think because it's work. Proverbs shows you how intelligent you are. It gives you the wisdom of your ancestors. I wanted to go through a list of what it is to be a man, or what manhood is supposed to be about already. So for me, manhood involves at least five major components. You have educator, leader, provider, protector, and respecter of women. In our home, politics are simple. Politics don't have to be big. They should really be simple things. For Indiana, no Euros, no homos, no Negroes. One word for me. It's a very important word in our house. Well, John Rick Clark talked about how the Romans, when they wanted to conquer Kemet, they would greet each other every day. Greeting, fellow Roman. Egypt must not fall. Greeting, fellow Roman. Egypt must fall. And this was an affirmation they said to each other day in and day out until they did it. We must say something along those lines. How you say and what you say, that's up to you, but we need to incorporate that into our conversation. We say a BV Fahodie. Can you say that with me? A BV Fahodie. A BV Fahodie. That's tree for African liberation. A BV Fahodie. We say that when we greet each other in the morning. We say that when we walk out the door. We say that when we're going to bed. We say that whenever anyone sneezes. A bee for holy air. A bee for holy air. A bee for holy air. A bee
for holy. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Now let's finish this transformation thing over here. We got to the part of your specialized training and replacing fear with skills. A man has to be in shape. He has to take care of his body. He has to have a certain amount of strength. For young men, for those of you who are still home with your mother, if you moved out with your mother, you got your what you call your girlfriend, and you got your apartment or whatever, I need you to, when you get up in the morning, wake up bright and early. If you got to be to work at 8 o'clock, make sure you wake up early because you're going to set a new priority. I need you to do your 25 push-ups. I need you to do 25 squats and 50 calf raises. That's the end of your exercise. Do a little stretch through this hill every single day until you can afford to buy more equipment and sculpt the body a little bit more so your girlfriend and your wife won't be missing it. Okay? Now we wanna be in shape. If you're an older man, you still wanna do a certain amount of exercise and be completely conscious of your body. There shouldn't be nothing around your house limp at no time. You know what I mean by that. So you got to take care, do the research, or whatever you got to do, because that's all a part of being a man. Now, we got a caller. Area code 215. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment. 215.
Black Power, it's your boy Fatigue from United Urban Nation. I mean, I'm sitting here listening to y'all, you know what I mean, bringing a good point up in the issue with the mortgage traders.
Okay, brother.
They're traitors, so they signed the treaties with white supremacy. And they signed a Morocco law, they signed treaties with white supremacy. They turn on our own people.
Okay.
Us? I understand the Moors are African. We was the first man that sent the black woman, the black king here on earth ever, you know what I mean? But they signed treaties when they met Christopher Columbus, discovered a new world, which was America, enslaved more Africans from Africa, brought them over to America, and made them slaves for 594 years currently.
Okay. Well, I understand all that, but tonight what I'm trying to do is provide some solutions and make some transformations and get the young men in position to be prepared to deal with it right now. So let me ask you this. In your opinion, over and above everything that I've already said, what else do you think that young men should do to make the transformation from boy to man?
What you said makes a valid good point. I respect what you said because, you know what I mean, anything, nevertheless, you know what I mean, will be, you know what I mean, frivolous. Everything you said makes a point. I respect making our kids, bringing our kids grow up to be men and women, to, you know what I mean? But at the same time, you know what I mean, they got to have guidance there. They got to have guidance in the family, you know what I mean? They can't be torn down. They got to be known. They got to teach their history first, you know what I mean? They can't get nowhere in life without be taught in your history, period. You know what I mean?
All right, what else you think we ought to do?
Well, the thing we ought to do, me personally over here in America, is teach our youth, build more schools so our youth can, get a dignity of their heritage, their ancestors. But right now, if I show them an RBG flag, they won't even know what the hell that shit look like. You know what I mean?
A flag. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about just you, me.
Me personally?
Just raw man to man. We ain't talking about nothing, no symbolism, no none of that. Just you in the house, one man knock on your door, and you open the door, and he say, look, I've been take your house. What you going to do?
Oh, hell no. You already know. Come on, black man. You know I ain't playing that shit.
Well, wait a minute now. Come on now with all the cussing and stuff. I done had enough of that on there. All right, but that's what I'm trying to deal with now.
I'm saying you black just like I am. You know what I mean? Like I don't mean disrespect your show, but come on, man. You know we're not having that. Period. You know what I mean? Another man coming in the house saying I take over this. Nah, it don't go down like that.
What are you going
to
do?
You know what I mean? What I'm going to do? I'm gonna be the man. I'm gonna be the king that I am of the household. First of all, if another man that's going to come in and invade my house unless he know my queen. If he know my queen and my queen's been cheating on me and not been living up to the expectation that she's supposed to, then, you know what I mean, I'm going to deal with him at the appropriate time and I'm going to deal with her at the appropriate time. You know what I mean? But 9 times out of 10, ain't no king that's going to come, ain't no another man that's going to come up in my house and just say, yo, I'm going to take over this shit. Unless it's white supremacy, unless it's a pig, unless it's a beast.
So it's all right for them to come and say it. If he the police, he come to your house, he got a gun, eh?
No, it's not all right at all, period. If police come to my house, first of all, there's got to be a reason why you come to my house, and that's one. Two, I'm not going to let you come in my house, period. And you know
okay,
that,
but
you know that.
Let me ask you this right here. When a man come to your house and he got a gun, You look out the window and you see him. When you open the door, what you going to have?
Well, I'm going to be armed. Me personally.
Okay.
Me personally.
All right.
Me personally. I'm going to tell you who I am. I was a former member of the New Black Panther Party, you know what I mean? I was in the New Black Panther Party. I'm no longer with them, you know what I mean? I got my arm in another organization called United Urban Nation. What I'm talking right now is always be armed, always be armed, always be aware in hells of North America. So I'm always well prepared, you know what I mean, to protect my family, protect my house. So if I see a peck of wood coming to my crib with a gun or trying to break in my crib, we're going to bang it out, period, just like that. It's going to be a bang out, period. And that ain't even got to be a peck of wood. It could be somebody of my own race trying to invade my house. That's home. You got to protect your kids. You got to protect your queen, period. That's it.
Okay.
Black power is that.
All right, brother. Well, I certainly appreciate you coming on and voice your opinion. If there's anybody else out there that got any more comments, go ahead and raise your hand. We got 43 minutes to get this thing right. I'm going on to the next phase, and I certainly appreciate the brother coming on and talking to us about this. And so go ahead and raise your hand, and we get you in there, okay?
We have a tremendous amount of power in our hands. Right here in America, we are not a weak people by any stretch of the imagination. The only weakness is in our minds and in our imaginations. That's the only place. We are not a dependent people in the material sense, only in the psychological sense. The only thing, ladies and gentlemen, we must get over is our cowardice. That's the only thing. That's the only thing. We can change this. I will speak briefly then to the issue this evening relating to the message that Dr. Bragan brought you last week around this conference, titled Genetic Factors in Crime, Findings, Uses, and Implications, which was to occur at the University of Maryland. I've warned you many times, and I've told you many times, I don't know whether it gets through to you or not, that we as black people must get over this thing of looking at schools and universities as advanced vocational training institutions. How many people recall that I've repeated this time and time again? That the function of education is not jobs. That is not the primary function. Children and people are educated. The primary function for education is to advance the interests of a people and to protect their interests, to secure their survival. That the educational structures and institutions of this country are as much a part of its defense, of its armed forces, as are its soldiers. The bombs, the weaponry that this nation uses against other nations and intimidates other nations with, develop out of the universities. The germ warfare, the chemical warfare, political, because some great professor is the head of this particular department, or they have illustrious names in the department, chances are you will never see them teach you in a class. The graduate students on some kind of assistantship will more likely be your teacher. Where are the brains and where are the professors? They're doing research, and often they're doing research on government grants for the government, for the corporations, for the other institutions in the society, and they are part of then the total system of domination of this country. Afrocentric education above all, and even beyond the teaching of African history and African culture, is preparing our children to defend the very lives of African people, is a military preparation and a preparation for war. It is the means by which we will maintain our biological survival as a people. For if you do not survive What does it matter if you teach reading to 100% of our children? Or they learn math well? Or they learn computer science? Or all the other things you think are important when your very lives are in the balance? And it is very likely that they will be snuffed out in the next 10 to 20 years. And yet we still continue to look at schools and colleges and universities as vocational institutions. And here we have then at the University of Maryland, long connected with the U.S. Army, by the way, hosting a conference on so-called genetic factors in crime. Reagan charged that this meeting, which was canceled, was part of a broader program, a violence initiative, a federal government research agenda, so that this program was only a part of a larger agenda. And it was designed to move toward finding a genetic marker that would supposedly identify children at high risk of becoming criminals and to develop plans to deter them through medication. And this is interesting due to the fact that there's little or no real information that links directly in any kind of strong way or even in a mild way a relationship between genes and criminality. There's been no DNA segment that has been discovered that codes for crime. When you think about it, the idea is ludicrous anyway. What is crime? What is violence? What is violence? In other words, I'm asking this question because you have to do a linguistic analysis. There are all forms of what? Violence. There are many different types of what? Crime. Different types of aggression. Not all violence is necessarily bad. There is what we in psychology may call hostile aggression. But there is aggression or violence that may be used in terms of what? Self-defense. Violence may be used to protect your children from attack. Violence may be used to protect the lives of other people. So now if we're going to get a gene for violence, what type of violence, or in removing the gene for violence, if we were to find it, which is an unlikely situation, are we also removing a people's capacity to defend themselves and to use violence in their own interests? What I'm saying is then, be very careful when people use words like violence, aggression, crime, and so forth, and ask yourself, what kind of crime? You know, do we have a gene for every type of crime you can name? So that even when we change definitions of crime, a new gene comes into being that we're going to find related to that particular crime. And when we decide that certain other behavior is no longer a crime, will the gene which was coded for that crime disappear? Ludicrous. Ludicrous. I talk in Black on Black Violence about the structuration of crime. That crime follows, the type of violence that we talk about, or crime, even its nature, follows the class structure and follows the skills levels of criminals. You see? Why is there so much so-called violent crime in certain segments of the society? Because when you look at the skills levels of the people committing them, if they were to commit a crime, that's about the only crime they could commit. If they were accountants, they would commit the crime of embezzlement and steal hundreds of thousands or millions because they have a particular ability or skill. And you'd be a fool if you were an accountant or in an S&L where you can steal millions of dollars and then make the public pay billions back and then hang out on the street and knock somebody out in the head. So here we have this crimogenic society that robs our people of skills and other means, so that if they decide to participate in a crime, then the probability is that it will be violent by the very nature of the way the society has set them up in the beginning. In other words, the society even determines the type of crime you are most likely to commit itself. Okay? And then it tells you, you're violent. Teach me to be an accountant. I won't hit any more people in the head. I'll just rob them by books. Okay? And then they want to talk about white-collar crime and, you know, and the other kind of collar crime. Come on. Wake up. This has nothing to do with genes. It has to do with the nature. I've also told you about reversal, right? I mentioned the fact that in order for us as a people to be in the situation that we are in, we literally have to be turned backwards. We have to think backwards, behave backwardly, deal with the world backwardly. It's necessary. That's the only way the system can maintain itself.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. At this point, I would like to say that there are men, real ones, out here listening to this broadcast. And I would certainly appreciate it if one of you lions will call in so that we can hear your roar, so that all the boys can know what it sounds like. Now, I want to get on to the next phase. And we're still working on the area about fear and its removal from you, so it does not exist in you anymore, because you have replaced it with skills. You got specialized training. You got your power in the brain. You connected to your own culture, your own story. You in good physical shape. Let's talk about weapons. We're going to start with the knife. You know, when it comes to that, you open up that blade, you fix it in your hand, where the blade is always pointing outward, not backward, but outward. So you're down in the woods, you're hunting, you gorilla jump out the woods. You not only can stab, but you can slash. Left and right. If you're out in the woods hunting in the jungle. Now, there are gun shows that go all across the country. They travel, they had the guns, they had the table with all the literature. I've been inside the gun shows and I see young men come in there, and they are fascinated by the look of certain weapons. They want to get a gun and match the rim on their car. And all of this kind of foolishness. But why don't you, when you go to the gun show, stop looking at the guns and look at the literature on the table, and start purchasing some of the literature on the table. And because you, when it comes to survival and out in the woods and hunting and stuff and being able to provide food to feed your family, and you want to be quiet and all that, these books and literature that's there teach you how to make specialized equipment that you can do things with. You may be out in the woods, and there's a stump in your way, and you're trying to figure out how to get around this stump. And they show you how to make charges and explosives to blow it out of your way. And so these books and stuff are available. Forget about buying guns that you like because it's pretty. That's what a boy does. A man does not do that. What he is coming in there for is the ultimate device that he needs when he's going hunting and fishing. Okay? So now, if there's any men out there, go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll open up the line, and we'll let you on in.
If there is a genetic marker for crime, would we look at the fact that the European has committed a crime against every people on every continent, destroyed millions of people, then that argues for his genetic criminality. And that argues then for us to medicate him and control him. You know, the other thing I'm surprised at is we keep being surprised. And we keep thinking that this is some new initiative. I mean, the violence initiative began with our enslavement and continues today. We already have bought the violence initiative, ladies and gentlemen. It is already operating. We bought it when we bought learning disabilities, when we bought the concept of hyperactivity, when we bought the concept of impulsivity, when we bought the concept of special education. You're already in it. Connected to these so-called symptoms of learning disability are the very same symptoms they're going to try to connect to the so-called genetic markers. And our children are already being drugged. The violence initiative has already occurred because our youth are already going to jail in record numbers. So why are we talking about these people are initiating something to bring and put our youth in jail? They're already in jail. Those that are not already in jail are in juvenile detention, are under the aegis of the VCWs. You heard it tonight. In the special education program, already being drugged, already being therapized, already having their minds distorted in various ways. And the worst violence initiative program is the public educational system itself. So this so-called initiative that you're talking about tonight is a mopping up operation. That's all it is. If you're telling me in Washington, D.C. and other places, black youth and black people, 75% are in some form of contact with the criminal justice system already, some 60% in any given day in Baltimore and other areas are already in contact with the criminal justice system, well, then what will this new initiative do? Just make it what? 100%. We should have already been what? Upset. Why are we kicking and screaming now? We should have been screaming already. This initiative is an old trick in psychiatry and psychology. It's a trick that we call the medicalization of social problems. That is to define a social and political problem as a medical problem, and to put psychiatrists who are doctors, physicians with MDs in control of the definition of these problems, even though they are an arm of the state, as are social workers, as are psychologists, as are all of the other helping professionals, but members of the state and arms of the state. But we are so willing to submit to their authority such that when they define social and political behavior and behavior which has social and political causes in medical terms, even the oppressed and the victimized consent to their mistreatment. Louis Sullivan is a part of this, but in a sense, we are all a part of it because we buy the medicalization of issues. And they know, since we are willing to do anything the doctor says, tells us to do, why are you taking that poison? The doctor said, take it every 2 hours. The doctor says. So now if the doctor says that your children have a marker, a genetic marker, then let's go with it. And we don't have time in the evening, one of these days we'll talk about psychiatric power and the role of psychiatrists in the system. Oh, the history of psychiatrists are horrendous. You won't believe it. You won't believe the tortures that have been created in the name of psychiatry that are even being perpetrated today. You won't believe the robbing of civil liberties, the robbing of freedom and all other kinds of things, the complete destruction and taking away of people's constitutional rights in the name of psychiatry. When you medicalize a problem and define it in medical terms, the patient loses all rights. And therefore, you can resolve a lot of issues that, if they were defined politically or socially, would then become constitutional and legal issues. But as soon as they are put under the aegis of medicine, then you reduce to a very great extent the legal and constitutional implications. So what we have going here then is an attempt to move social and political problems into the area of psychiatry so that we, even as African people, can consent to social control and the killing of our people. One quick thing, I know we're short here. Don't get caught up in this brain and biological basis of behavior. Okay? Don't be deceived because someone can say that they have found a biological correlate with behavior. That means it is genetic in nature, or that means it's congenital, or that means that the society has no responsibility for the behavior that the person is committing. Don't buy that baloney. People run that a lot. You know, as soon as we can locate some kind of brain deficiency and correlate it, then we're ready to say, oh, society is not responsible for it. Are you kidding? Learning and experience physically transforms the brain. Traumatic experiences and even positive experiences changes the biochemical nature of the brain, as well as the neuronal functional organization of the brain, and influences the number of dendrites and synapses and other things that cells use to communicate one with the other. Now, you must understand here then, and I could talk a great deal here about the experiments here that have shown very clearly that if you put certain animals through certain experiences, their brains actually can increase in weight. Let me give you a quick run of things that happens when some rats were placed in various environments. One group was placed in a so-called enriched environment. These rats being selected from the same genetic background, having the same genetic background and the same genetic inheritance. But they were put in under different environments. After they were put through, after they lived in these environments for a while, they were sacrificed and their brains looked at, weighed, measured, and analyzed. Now, those rats that were put in an enriched environment, let's look at some of the things that were found. They had an increased thickness of the cerebral cortex, or the gray matter. In other words, the thinking matter of their brain increased in thickness and weight. A 15% increase in the actual size of the neurons in the cortex. Increases in protein in the brain paralleling the increases in cortical weight, indicating that the growth effect was on tissue and not just on the fluid content of the brain. An increase in the amount of dendritic branching, dendrites are the hairy branching fibers which project in large numbers from the body of each neuron and which receive input from other neurons and conduct them to the cell bodies of other neurons. There was an increase in the branching of these neurons, and a greater amount of potential information was available to each neuron. An increased number of dendritic spikes per unit length of dendrite. Increases in the number of synapses and the sizes of the contacts between the synapses. An increase in the ratio between the weight of the cortex and the weight of the rest of the brain. A 15% increase in the number of glial cells, and on we go. What are we saying here then? That experience changes the brain, changes the nature and the functionality of the brain. So simply because you may find a brain correlate does not take society off the hook. It means then that if society controls the experience of a people, controls their experiences, it is manipulating their brain and controlling its size.
All right, Brother Dr. Amos Wilson giving us the breakdown of very, very important information that we need to know. This is vital for us to know this information, ladies and gentlemen. It is vital for us to understand this information.
Be sure to subscribe to NBTV at NBTV1.com. The people that cares.
Is now official. We just added all your law dictionaries to the Hawkins Archive. Just click on the link, Law Dictionary. We got your Bloomberry, we got your Oxford, we got your Essentials, we got your Bouvier, we got Black's Law Dictionary Volume 1 through 9. Check it out.
One, two, three.
All right, Moses, we back. I want to get on to the next phase. We've dealt with the power. You know how to get that. We dealt with getting in shape. We dealt with the proper use of a weapon if you have to. Now, I just want to say that back in my day, for a man to have a contest with another man, the use of a weapon in that contest was unheard of. Even the women knew. If you say James and Ricky was fighting, and Ricky pulled out a weapon, well, the women would say, well, I don't want nothing to do with Ricky, he ain't no man. What was interesting to me is the women would ask questions. What did James do? Well, James came out to face man to man. Well, what did Ricky do? Ricky pulled out a knife. Oh, no. I don't even want to deal with him. That was back then. They considered that as weakness. But then when I look at today's society, I have to go to who running the society. And it makes all the sense in the world to me now. Because if the foundation of your nation has a coward and cowardice and weakness at its foundation, then what could you expect for it to broadcast, to be accepted by the people? There is nothing else. When I go back and I look at my people to run a contrast, I look at, to start with, the so-called weaker vessel, so-called. I look at when Alexander the Great came into the interior of Africa. He went up in Ejikemet. We done suffered a whole lot of our natural disasters. Everything was up in there. It ain't like he went up in there and conquered nothing. He ain't went up on no man because if you had hundreds of years that it was being held as the greatest and most powerful nation right there. If you was a man, then you come up in there in a zenith for power and do something. You don't wait until it is all in shambles and deteriorating and natural disasters and stuck and run in and stick your chest out and say, well, I'm a man. No. But what he did was he came down in the interior. But when he got to the border of Ethiopia, a woman was waiting on him. She was a queen, suspended between two bull elephants. As far as he could see to the right, were a number of brothers with spears and shields. As far as he seen to the left, were nothing but brothers and shields. Now, I got to give it to him. He ordered his army to move forward 10 paces. But when he did, the queen ordered her army to turn around and simply walk into the jungle. He had some sense because he ordered his army to turn around and go back to Europe. He didn't go into the jungle after them, even though they invited him. He could have checked in, but I guarantee you, he wouldn't have checked out. Now, we have this thing today where we have people saying, well, have you ever heard of Alexander the Great? And my question is, great. As a matter of fact, I had a discussion with some men who say they're Greek. And that's what they asked me. You ever heard of Alexander the Great? I said, how great could he have been? I said, my sister invited him into the jungle. He turned around and him and all the boys ran. I said, you mean Alexander the Greek? Well, you can Greek, great, you know. I don't waste no time about all of that, you know. I said, I don't blame you. I said, you may have mistaken me for somebody who didn't know the truth. But anyway, the next thing that I want to get to is responsibility. The boy making a transformation from boy to man. Now the next phase is taking responsibility. You already proved beyond any shadow of a doubt that you are capable of taking care of yourself, providing for yourself. You have skills. You have hunting skills. You have fishing skills. You have adequate weapons to take care of yourself and to provide protection for your woman and your children and all of this. Now, let's deal with responsibility. Let's take we're taking responsibility for ourselves, our woman, our children. The next thing is to take a look at our community, our neighborhood. And start looking around. And you got to remember, when it comes to the money, you've already been given talents by your Creator. You're born with it. You got talents that you can do that nobody else can do but you. These are your natural given talents. And if you don't know what they are, why don't you, before you go to bed, ask your Creator, God, show me what it is so I can use it. Because I need to provide for my family, just me and my family. I guarantee you. He'll show you. He will definitely show you. As all you got to do, ask, and you receive. Now, I'm going to have to come back and finish this up at a later date. We're down to 7 minutes. If any of you got any questions or comments, go ahead, raise your hand. I'll open up the line, and you can ask your question or comment. Give me your comment about what we are discussing here this evening. Okay, but in the meantime, responsibility is the next thing. We need to look at our neighborhood. We don't have any communities, but we need to look at our neighborhoods. And then after we have gotten all that we need and provided some things for ourselves in that arena, the next thing we need to do is start looking at the state. You know where we are. You in Detroit? Well, what do you know about the rest of the Detroit? Let's find out what's going on in other parts of Detroit and see how we can find the men in these areas and connect with the men. See, we men only want to be connected to other men. If there are boys involved, the boys are pulled in for transformation. A man ain't looking for a boy to leave nowhere because he can't. It ain't in him. He can't do that. Not to remain as a man. A man does not walk around with his pants hanging off of his tail. I'm sorry to have to tell some of y'all that, because maybe you may be in a state of shock. You cannot be walking around here telling yourself you're a man and telling everybody you're a man and trying to act like you're a man and all this right here with your pants hanging down off your waist. A man wears his pants around his waist. He has a belt wrapped around his waist. Now, if there's any of you that disagree with that, I got 5 minutes. Let the switchboard light up and explain to us how allowing your pants to hang down off your butt make you a man. We're waiting. We got 59 seconds, 57, 56, 55, 54, 53, 52, 51. We're still waiting. Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've been your host, to Haka Amana El Bay. And I need you all to tune in. We're going to come back with part two of this thing, and so that we can get it all laid out. Then we're going to deal with girls and women. We're going to deal with both sides of this equation, okay? Don't hesitate to contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then that way we can get with you and communicate with you. If you're having problems with your bill collectors or whatever, we got the archives there available, and you're in there by yourself. Once you get up in there, then we're going to walk hand in hand, step by step, until you get success. If the popo, if you're dealing with a child support issue, if you're dealing with a confiscation of your children, if your children is being shot down in the street, it doesn't matter what it is. Call this number, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we can discuss it with you, and so that we can get to a solution and a remedy for the situation. This is how we deal with Tahaka's Archive. Okay? You all have a good night.